RCR, AM 1300, Rockland County's hometown radio station.
The following program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
Diabetes and no health insurance can be a lethal combination. So can heart disease and no health insurance. Even strep throat without proper care could turn serious, even life-threatening. That's why at the American Medical Association, we're fighting back with a combination of our own. Today, physicians are caring for many uninsured patients, and they're speaking out with them to make sure all Americans have coverage. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voiceforTheUninsured.org. That's voicefortheuninsured.org, because one out of seven is 45 million too many.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rate? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders, with benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. firstresponders.com.
Everyone, thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland, and it's streaming live at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today, Kimberly McCleary, President and CEO of the Chronic Fatigue Immune Dysfunction Syndrome Association of America, CFIDS.org, will join me to talk about chronic fatigue syndrome. Kimberly has extensive experience and knowledge with CFS, and she has worked with Dr. Julie Gerberding, director of the CDC, Centers for Disease Control. And the CDC states that 1 million Americans suffer with chronic fatigue syndrome, but only 20% have been diagnosed. Call in today with any questions to 845-624-1300. And joining us now to talk about chronic fatigue syndrome is Kimberly McCleary. Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, sure. Kimberly, I want to ask you, as mentioned in the intro, according to the CDC, 1 million Americans suffer with chronic fatigue, yet only 20% have been diagnosed. What's the reason for such a small amount of people being diagnosed with chronic fatigue?
Well, I think there are two factors involved. First, is that the symptoms that characterize CFS, and we can run through those, are common to many other illnesses and disorders, and it can often take a little while to figure out exactly what's going on. This illness comes on usually quite suddenly. People remember not only the day that they began feeling ill, but often the hour, and even the minute of the day that their health changed, dramatically. And so that becomes one of the distinguishing factors. Along with that sudden onset is a series of symptoms, and there are eight case-defining symptoms, if you will, that are characteristic of the illness. And those are pain in the muscles and joints that can shift from one part of the body to the other, headaches of a new type or severity, sore throat is quite common, tender nodes in the neck and the armpits and the groin area. Unrefreshing sleep is one of the cardinal symptoms, and people find that whether they have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, when they wake up in the morning, they don't feel refreshed. They don't feel like they've had that good quality, restful sleep that restores the body. Also, problems with memory and concentration and processing information are quite common. And the most distinct symptom to me is the post-exertional relapse of all the other symptoms after even modest physical or mental activity. So a trip to the grocery store, or trying to balance your checkbook, or doing homework with your child will put you in bed for a day or 3 days or a week, something very unusual and uncommon to other symptoms. But going back to your initial question about why the low rate of diagnosis is that many people just aren't familiar with what the list of symptoms are for chronic fatigue syndrome. Even if they've heard that term before, you think of it as tiredness, and in our 24/7 world today, who isn't tired, particularly by a Friday evening? But it is much more than fatigue. I think the other factor that drives that low statistic is that the healthcare professionals are not as familiar as they need to be with this condition and how to make the diagnosis, and it's often overlooked because they feel it's either just a long-lasting flu, or this is malingering, or this is, you know, a host of other problems, hypothyroidism, or anemia, or, you know, things that have some of those same symptoms, and it's either often overlooked or misdiagnosed. And so to change those numbers, we really have to educate both the public and people who are experiencing these symptoms and the healthcare profession, and that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, let's try to break it down a little bit. I know you went through the symptoms. Now, when these symptoms come on, do people experience all of them, or maybe just one, or how does it work when initially someone thinks that they're experiencing something that could be diagnosed as chronic fatigue?
Well, the most common presentation when this first comes on is people describe it as, this is the worst flu I have ever had. It's all of those symptoms of the flu that you think of, that foggy-headed feeling, that feeling like you're trying to swim through a vat of molasses, achiness all over the body, the inability to even, you know, rise from the bed to get up and take care of the basic activities of daily living, showering and eating are a challenge. It's that just leaden feeling that you get with the flu in addition to the type of infectious things like the sore throat and the headache and the head pain, and that persists, not just for a couple weeks that you might expect maybe to have a bad flu, but for much longer than that, into months and years. So they can come on all at the same time, but then over time, different things may shift around. The pain may be worse at times, or the cognitive problems may be the greatest difficulty. Just maintaining any sort of consistent level of activity is often a problem. There are a number of other symptoms that aren't part of the quote-unquote formal case definition that people report, like night sweats and loss of hair, weight gain or weight loss, that are quite common also.
Does it affect men as equally as women, or is it one gender over the other?
Actually, the studies have shown that women are affected about four times the rate of men, which does suggest an autoimmune component. As you know, most autoimmune conditions like MS or lupus or rheumatoid arthritis are much more common in women than in men. It could also be a factor of men not seeking medical attention and therefore not showing up in the numbers, in the same numbers as women, but it's probably a combination of
them. Now, you mentioned it's autoimmune factor. Is there a diagnostic test that can be done, or a blood test or something that somebody can just go and have being tested?
Unfortunately not. No diagnostic test, either a urine test or a blood test. Right now, what needs to happen in getting diagnosed is that this characteristic pattern of symptoms is present, and then a thorough history and physical exam is conducted, and then some of the usual blood tests that you get when you go into the doctor and have been having ill health for a while to rule out really other causes of the symptoms.
I would imagine that this is a very long, entailed process of trying to sort out what's going on because it can mimic so many other disorders.
That's quite true, and it does require persistence and patience on the part of both the individual and the physician or nurse practitioner or PA in being careful and thorough and comprehensive in the evaluation while taking care of some of the symptomatic treatments at the same time.
Right.
You don't have to wait until you know what the answer is to take care of things like pain and sleep and allergy and, you know, other things that might be complicating your ability to function and handle daily life.
How with the healthcare practitioners, the doctors, nurse practitioners, how key how much, you know, are they in tune to chronic fatigue? If somebody comes into their office and gives them a list of symptoms that they've been going through or experiencing, do they automatically think this could be chronic fatigue, or are there only a certain number of practitioners that really are in tune to really know what's going on so they can order all these different tests to rule it out?
I think it's getting better. We have directed our provider education efforts at primary care providers because we think that those are the most likely to see these patients early on in their illness. And the earlier that people get diagnosed and get some even symptomatic treatment help, the better the long-term outcome is. So that's key, is getting to this sort of early on. It used to be that it took people years to get diagnosed, and now we're seeing that number come down a little bit, although there still isn't as much awareness about this condition and how to make the diagnosis and how to deal with the symptomatic treatment as we'd like. And you know, we're working at that in collaboration with the CDC and other groups. But there is a clear diagnostic flow chart that physicians can follow, and the symptomatic treatments are things that they're going to use every day in their practice. You know, treating pain is quite a common thing in medical practice. Treating sleep problems are quite common, and we have better tools for both of those things than we used to.
Is it very difficult to make the determination between depression and chronic fatigue syndrome? Is there a correlation between the two? Or
that certainly is an important distinction to draw, and I'm glad you asked the question, because they're quite different things, both biologically and in terms of how the individual presents, although there are some symptoms that overlap. And what the research has shown is that in depression, it's quite common for depressed patients to have high levels of a hormone called cortisol. And in CFS, the cortisol is typically low. So that's one important biological distinction. Also, the presentation of the patient is quite different. Among people who are have major depressive disorder, and that's their primary problem, they are withdrawing from everyday activities because there's no interest in kind of outside life and what their usual pattern of behavior is. With CFS patients, they're desperate to get back to the lives they once knew and to the activities that they enjoyed, and that's something that can be sorted out pretty easily, particularly if you're seeing a doctor that's known you well and that, you know, knows you used to be maybe somebody who worked a lot and was engaged in the community and had a lot of family activities going on, and then suddenly sees that you're not capable of doing any of those things, although you're still expressing a desire very much to get back to those activities. That's quite different from depression.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that the health history has to be purely accurate, where a patient really can't hold back anything. They would need to really be up front and tell them, the healthcare professional, exactly their symptoms.
Yes, that's true, both in describing the symptoms as accurately as they can, and in also disclosing what medications and supplements and over-the-counter things that they might have tried to relieve some of the symptoms, because, as you know, there are side effects with almost everything we take. And sometimes that can be either mask what's going on, whether it's CFS or something else, or it can add on to otherwise the effects that you're seeing from the illness.
How long does it take to diagnose chronic fatigue from the moment a patient first experiences symptoms until an accurate diagnosis is made? How long does that usually take?
Well, I think that depends on the healthcare setting. You know, if you're fortunate to encounter somebody who's quite familiar with it. I know that some of the experts who see a lot of these patients say this is like Beethoven's, you know, fifth. I hear the first few notes and I know what's going to come after that. And they can, you know, they kind of go right to the heart of it, and they know where to make the fine distinctions just to be sure that they're not overlooking something. Whereas if you're working with your internist or an OBGYN or something to help you sort this out, it may take several visits to order some lab tests, see how those come back. If things are, looking abnormally high or low, to make sure that you're not passing hypothyroidism over or some more common reasons for this, and just, you know, it may take a period of weeks or months to get to the bottom mm-hmm. of it. It's unfortunately, you know, we don't have any easy answers at this
right.
point, but it is possible to do it.
And just go through the symptoms again briefly. I know you went through them earlier on, but I think it's important for the listeners to know really what's involved, because this is such an involved illness, really, because so many symptoms are going on
yes.
at one time.
And it's much more complex than its name would, you know, reference. But in addition to fatigue, and I want to make clear that when I say fatigue, we're not talking about the tiredness that otherwise healthy people will feel at the end of a busy day mm-hmm. or a busy week. We're talking about a fatigue that really limits your life activities, that is not relieved by rest, that is different from any fatigue you've had in the past.
Is it that where they can't get out of bed?
I mean, can't get out of bed, mm-hmm. or that getting out of bed and attempting any level of activity has a repercussion, call it kind of the push and crash phenomenon, that mm-hmm. you think, okay, today I'm feeling a little bit better and I'm going to make up for lost time and do the things I haven't been able to do for the last few days, and that generates a relapse of several days. So that fatigue combined with this post-exertional crash or relapse are really two of the cardinal features of CFS. And then with that are the muscle pain, joint pain, impaired memory, concentration, and information processing, the unrefreshing sleep, the headaches, the sore throat, and the tender lymph nodes. So those are the eight case-defining symptoms, and you have to have four of those eight plus the fatigue for a period of 6 months. But if you're feeling that poorly for 6 months, mm-hmm. you really ought to seek medical attention before you hit that,
right.
you know, 6 month period.
Mm-hmm. And what's the treatment for chronic fatigue?
Well, most of the we'll focus on treating the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And if sleep is a problem, we all know how we feel after a couple nights of not getting the kind of rest we need, whether that's, you know, 4 hours for some people or 8 hours for others. If you go without the type of sleep that you're used to getting, you begin to ache all over, you don't think right. So sleep is usually where most of the professionals who treat this regularly begin, and they try to even out the sleep and make sure people are getting some restorative hours of sleep. And then dealing with the pain issues, whether it's headaches or joint pain or muscle pain. There is an overlapping condition called fibromyalgia that is a body-wide kind of spread pain in the muscles and joints.
Mm-hmm.
And there was recently, just this summer, a FDA-approved treatment for fibromyalgia called Lyrica that can be helpful to some CFS patients for whom pain is a problem as well. Once pain is dealt with, a lot of CFS patients also have allergies to many things, and treating allergies in a variety of ways can be helpful in relieving some of the overall symptoms. Depression can be occur with this at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not able to do the things you enjoy doing and you're not able to keep up with your family and you have to cut back on your work, that can be, you know, lead to a reactive depression, and certainly treating depression is an important symptom
mm-hmm.
to treat. It's not going to help, you know, you're not
right.
going to be cured with an antidepressant, but it can have some effects also on the immune system that can be helpful in other ways as well.
How about acupuncture or meditation, you know, relaxation techniques? Do those
Certainly.
Seem to help people?
They do. You know, we hear reports from people who use Tai Chi and acupuncture and massage and
mm-hmm.
Meditation. Some people, you know, look to their spirituality. You know, and those, anything you can do to cope better
right.
And be supportive in your health and try to get your health as rock solid as possible, even in the face of this illness, can certainly help, you know, make global improvements.
And is there
diet is also mm-hmm. another important thing.
Sure, okay. And is increasing any certain vitamin or anything like that
Well, there
important?
Have been some studies that point to vitamin D deficiency
mm-hmm.
In CFS. And so many practitioners now are suggesting, let's pump up your vitamin D. There are certain of the vitamin B subsets that have been shown to be deficient in CFS. So just overall nutritional support is important. Mm-hmm. In any chronic illness, it sometimes becomes difficult and challenging just to get the daily nutritional needs met, and these vitamin deficiencies can occur as a consequence of that.
Right.
So those are important things, mm-hmm. you know, to be talking with your healthcare practitioner about as well.
I actually did get some emails from listeners, and one listener said that exercise seems to help her a lot. Do you find with the patients that that's important for them?
Exercise is a bit of a two-edged sword. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, anything that contributes to deconditioning has its own set of problems. If we are in bed for too long, even with the flu, you get out of bed and you get back to kind of everyday life, and you're going to have some muscle soreness as your muscles atrophy pretty quickly. On the other hand, too much exercise, and exercise sort of in the no pain, no gain framework of what, you know, Nike's Just Do It, that mindset of exercise can be problematic because people, this post-exertional relapse, as we refer to it, being one of the hallmark symptoms of CFS, if people exert and try to push themselves beyond a narrowed energy envelope, it can have pretty drastic repercussions on the back end. So exercise is important in terms of keeping the body limber and making sure that the muscles don't break down, but it has to be a redefined idea of what exercise means, and that often begins with some gentle stretching and exercising in a 1-to-3 ratio where you might exercise for 3 minutes and then rest for 9 and exercise for 3 minutes again. And that's just outside of what most people generally think about is, you know, hit the gym and jump on your stair climber or something for an hour. Well, that's not the kind of exercise that really will benefit a CFS patient. It has to be very gradual and tailored to a person's sort of very different abilities when they have this illness.
What's the future outlook in terms of research? How far are they from curing chronic fatigue?
Well, I think we're probably a distance from curing. I think that we're going to have some better diagnostics in the near future. Some of the newer research with the enhanced brain imaging and body imaging techniques that are now available and being used on a research basis are pointing to some things that are pretty exciting in terms of both understanding what's going on in the body and also perhaps being diagnostic in value. Some of the new gene studies are pointing to things that may help us target treatments better in the future. There have also been a renewed interest in infectious agents as triggers for this, and there are a number of studies underway looking at human herpes virus 6, enteroviruses, the Epstein-Barr virus that causes mono that was initially linked to this and then sort of discarded, but there's renewed interest in looking at that. So as we better understand how this begins and what sorts of things might trigger it, that does give us some treatment options that weren't previously considered before.
Mm-hmm. On the CFIDS.org site, there's a quote, actually, I just want to read for the listeners from Dr. Peter Rowe from Johns Hopkins Medical School. I think it's important for them to hear this. He says, because there is no diagnostic test or biological marker for CFS, it's a diagnosis of exclusion, but CFS can be diagnosed in a primary care setting. Referring patients to various specialists just to confirm a CFS diagnosis is costly and usually unnecessary. So for the listeners, I think if they're experiencing symptoms, for them to really do their homework and try to find a practitioner that really is in tune with diagnosing chronic fatigue.
And I think, too, another place to start is go to the healthcare professional who knows you best.
Right.
For many women, that's their OBGYN, and for others, it's either their internist or their family doctor. And start there, because the more they know about your pre-illness self, the greater the distinction is. I mean, these are dramatic changes that occur in people's lives that, certainly one of the things that's always bothered me is people will say, oh, they just say they've got CFS for the secondary gain. Well, there's no secondary gain in telling someone you have chronic fatigue syndrome. And you know, most people would not discard the lives they had to stay in bed and
It must be a very frustrating illness for somebody to go through. It just those battery of symptoms that they experience just must be so overwhelming.
And the uncertainty of it.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a bit of a remitting, relapsing pattern. So you may have a good period, and then all of a sudden you're at your worst point again, and you don't really understand what that relationship is and whether you can predict that, yes, I'll be able to go to, you know, my daughter's wedding a month from now. So that unpredictability and the uncertainty about it is very difficult to live with.
It must
even
be,
for patients who've been ill for a long time and have become sort of used to that.
That must be very difficult, yeah. I just want to point out, too, on the CFIDS.org website, there's information for health professionals, too, where you can go for free continuing education courses.
That's
which is
right.
Very good to know.
Yes, we've been doing grand rounds trainings around the country at medical schools and offering the CME on the website, and we have a print course that healthcare professionals can take for credit. So we're trying to get the word out in a lot of different ways.
That's great. Kimberly, thank you so very much for joining us and educating the listeners on chronic fatigue. The website, again, is CF, as in Frank, ID, as in Doris, S.org. And as always, you can go to healthin30.com for more info. Kimberly, thanks again. Thanks so very much. Just a quick note. Dr. Fred Pescatori, one of Health in 30's medical experts, a practicing internist in New York City, a traditionally trained doctor who practices integrative medicine, a New York Times bestselling author, author of the Hamptons Diet Cookbook, and author of The Allergy and Asthma Cure, Feed Your Kids Well, and Thin for Life, has joined Health in 30 as Ask the Expert. So email us your health questions, and Dr. Pescatori will answer them. Log on to healthin30.com and go to Contact Us. Your questions will be answered on healthin30.com. And just another quick note, don't forget, the AMA wants to hear from you. If you have a story to share about being uninsured, or you would like to send them your comments or questions or suggestions, go to voicefortheuninsured.org. And don't forget, go to Contact Us at healthin30.com, send in your health questions, and Dr. Fred Pescatori will answer them. And Gail from Stony Point, thanks for listening, and thanks for your question. Keep a check on healthin30.com, and Dr. Fred has an answer there for you. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week. And for more info and upcoming shows, go to healthin30.com. Next week, there's no show. I'm actually speaking at the Nursing Spectrum Career Fair at the Marriott Marquis in New York City. So keep a check and log on to healthin30.com for upcoming shows. As always, take charge of your health. Speak up and ask questions. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week and see you soon.
One out of seven means they can all fall down, except for Sarah. Why? Because Sarah is uninsured. In fact, one out of seven Americans are uninsured. This isn't just a number or a graph in a report. It's people, families with simple needs like wanting to provide for a child, and children who want nothing more than to be children. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voicefortheuninsured.org. That's voicefortheuninsured.org, because one out of seven is 45 million too many.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rate? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders, with benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. firstresponders.com.
All my horizon, national anthem. AM 1300,